Hello and welcome. I'm Ben Schultz.
I'm Nora Schultz.
And you're listening to Trying to Adapt, and today we're trying to adapt to Notre Dame de Paris, or The Hunchback of Notre Dame by Victor Hugo. This is part three, and I have no idea where I'm going to put the cutoff point.
Yeah, so already, like, this just sucks for Esmeralda. Phoebus gets stabbed in front of her, and she is accused of the crime.
So after this, a whole month passes, and Pierre Gringoire and all the other gypsies have no idea what's happened to Esmeralda. I guess they just assume that, like, that Phoebus killed her or whatever.
Yeah, I have no idea.
They're kind of hoping that she's alive, but, you know, with every day that passes, they just kind of assume that, like, she must have died somehow.
So Pierre Gringoire has been living with the Court of Miracles. He passes by the Palace of Justice, and he sees that there is a crowd gathered, and they're all talking about this woman who stabbed this officer, and Pierre has nothing better to do. He goes to the Palace of Justice. They are interrogating the woman who, like, runs this hotel where this took place. Basically, everyone agrees that, like, yes, this was sorcery. Clearly, Phoebus was killed by sorcery.
And she comes up with some weird story. I don't know if she actually believes this or if she's just making it up on the spot, but the hotel keeper says, like, the money that they paid me with turned into a birch leaf.
It's sorcery. Everybody's conclusion is that clearly this was black magic, and therefore it has to be Esmeralda because she has a demon goat and she is not white. Esmeralda stands up as being the one on trial, and Pierre's like, oh shit. So that's where Esmeralda's been. All Esmeralda really cares about is whether or not Phoebus is alive. It's clear that, like, she doesn't really fully understand what's happening to her. Everyone just kind of assumes that Phoebus either died or is in the act of dying, including Frollo himself. Phoebus is fine. He just kind of got stabbed in the shoulder, but Esmeralda thinks that he's actively dying. Everyone in the court thinks that he's actively dying. As we've already seen, the justice system of medieval Paris is really spot on. And the next person, thing that they decide that they're going to interrogate is Jolly, the goat.
And in order to do this, they just have the goat do all of its little tricks. And they, you know, as before, they're like, oh shit, that's sorcery.
Yeah, clearly Esmeralda is a witch, used witchcraft to kill Phoebus, even though he's not dead, even though he was clearly just injured by a stab wound. Nope, it's gotta be sorcery, because that coin turned into a leaf, even though it was probably just misplaced. I think that is actually what happened, right? Isn't that, like,
I don't remember if they actually say that it was misplaced. I was wondering, like, what is the deal there?
I think that was mentioned in the chapter earlier, but I don't feel like going back.
So anyway, Esmeralda is obviously guilty, and they kind of knew that she would be guilty before they even started the trial, which is always a good tactic for a judicial system.
Always a good starting point. I mean, that's what they say, guilty until proven innocent. Yeah, because they are going to torture her, and keep in mind that Esmeralda is literally a child. She does what any 16-year-old would do and instantly says that she is guilty of the crime that they are convinced are accusing her of, because they basically put, like, this big boot around her foot and then squeeze her foot, which obviously hurts a lot. I think most people in that situation would be like, yeah, yeah, of course, just stop hurting me. You know, torture, always a great way to get people to confess to things they didn't do. And not only does she confess to the murder, but they're also like, you know, are you a witch? And she's like, yeah, sure. And these guys who have been torturing her are like, wow, that was so easy. I love justice.
So with that little display over with, they take Esmeralda to not just the dungeon, but the dungeon below the normal dungeon, which is basically like the medieval version of solitary confinement, where it's completely dark, there's no sound or anything, and someone just occasionally drops some bread in there once a day.
Yeah, basically her punishment is that she is going to be held here until she and Jolly have to be brought to the Place de Grève to be hanged. Because obviously, you know, they're witches. But before they even hang her, She has to be brought in front of Notre Dame, where she will, you know, like, confess her crimes publicly, and then they will bring her to be hanged.
As vindictive and evil as Frollo is, he doesn't actually want to see her die just yet. He still thinks maybe he has a chance, and since he's got so much leverage over her now...
Well, you know, because of the implication.
Yeah. He heads down to her prison cell and basically tells her, like, look, if you love me, I will get you out of here.
Well, yeah, because Esmeralda's like, why are you coming to visit me? I recognize you. You've tried to kidnap me.
You're the guy who stabbed Phoebus, etc.
Yeah, because she was, like, underneath Phoebus and saw who stabbed Phoebus above her. And also, Frollo's just been, like, following her around and, like, yelling witchcraft and stuff while she's been performing. So she's straight up just like, why do you hate me so much? Why have you taken so much time out of your life just to make my life hell? And Frollo's like, well, because I love you. And Esmeralda obviously is like, what the fuck? And so Frollo goes on this long rant about how, you know, he loved his studies, never felt the urge to have sex, but he sees Esmeralda dancing, he falls instantly in love. Because Frollo's not a super well-adjusted guy, he figures, well, if I'm feeling these sexual urges, then clearly a devilish curse has been placed upon me, and Esmeralda is in league with the devil. So Frollo's first strategy is, well, I'm just going to get rid of her. So he tries to get her, like, he tries to make it so that she can't enter the square in front of the church. He tries kidnapping her with Quasimodo's help. He tries to denounce her as a witch. And, like, you know, the witch thing obviously worked in his favor. So now she's in prison and he figures, like, well, she doesn't have any other choice. One thing the Disney movie got pretty right is that Frollo basically figures, okay, so, at this point, there's no way I'm gonna go to heaven, right? Like, I've been having all these sinful thoughts. I can't do anything about it. I've tried to get rid of them. I've whipped myself, etc. So, my two options at this point are I can make Esmeralda fall in love with me. And, you know, I'm not a super good-looking guy, so I'm gonna have to, like, work out some strategy here. Or, I can just have her killed. Or get rid of her in some other way. Obviously, like, he tries to get rid of her in other ways before this. But he's pretty desperate at this point.
So, with his attempt to kill her, or to arrest her, basically not going anywhere, his attempt to kidnap her also failing, he basically decides that he has to find some way that he can have her. He's lost all hope of trying to resist the demonic possession that he's been placed under.
Yeah, and throughout all this, you know, Frollo, obviously, he thinks that the devil is out to get him. He thinks that fate is working against him. You know, he thinks of himself as that fly caught in the spider's web. He doesn't want to take any accountability for, you know, I mean, he's like 35. Like, just grow up, get over your feelings.
He says to her, well, basically, this is all God's fault, because God is the one who failed to make man and the devil of equal strength.
Which is a kick-ass line, and so kick-ass they even used it in the Disney movie, rated G. Frollo clearly does not have much experience with the ladies, because he rips open his cloak and shows, like, look, see, I was stabbing myself in the chest while they were torturing you because it hurt me so badly. And his wound is, like, super gross and infected. Obviously, Esmeralda's, like, really freaked out by this, because that is not a healthy thing at all. You know, Frollo's whole thing is, like, you should feel bad for me, because I'm so desperately in love with somebody that I can't have, and Esmeralda is like, well, yeah, so am I with Phoebus. So this has the exact opposite effect of what Frollo wanted. Esmeralda only laughs at Frollo instead. This was not a good strategy to get her to like him anymore.
And perhaps most importantly, when he gives her this ultimatum of either you love me or you die, she is so in love with Phoebus and so disturbed by the fact that he's dead, she doesn't want to continue living anymore, so she's totally willing to just take the option where she dies.
Yeah, this is something you'll see change in adaptations a lot, and this is an example. Like, I During A Christmas Carol, I mentioned several times how, like, a lot of plot changes could be positive. This season is where I'm really going to, like, delve into that further, because here we have specific examples of what I mean. In a lot of adaptations, you'll see that Esmeralda is faced with this choice, and she says no to Frollo more out of, like, personal respect. Whereas in the book, Esmeralda's kind of, like, one personality trait, other than that she's nice for a gypsy, is that, like, she is desperately in love with Phoebus, and that when she thinks Phoebus is dead, her world ends. So, like, this is obviously not very feminist of Victor Hugo, and that's something about Esmeralda's character that we will pay attention to, because this is a critical moment for her.
So now Esmeralda's fate is apparently sealed. There's no one left to save her because Frollo is so pissed off that he no longer cares if she dies. So the next day, they take her out into the square. They start doing their public penance. Phoebus happens to be hanging out on the balcony with his fiance, and she goes, "Hey, isn't that girl with the goat? That girl that you invited over to our house for some reason that one time?" And he's like, "I have no idea what you're talking about."
Yeah, so yeah, like, Phoebus, he's totally alive. He's obviously a little freaked out by the whole thing, and he doesn't want to have anything to do with Esmeralda. Unfortunately for Esmeralda, his intervention could do a lot of good in reducing her sentence, considering that he isn't dead. But, you know, Phoebus is, like I said, he's not the sharpest tool in the drawer, and he really just kind of wants to be rich and good-looking and have a lot of girls. So Esmeralda is about to do penance at Notre Dame, and of course, Claude Frollo is there. I don't know if this, like, would normally be the Archdeacon's responsibility, or if Frollo was like, "Hold on, guys, I got this." He is the one to speak to Esmeralda, and to the crowd, you know, he says, like, "Have you prayed for your crimes? Are you willing to do penance?" But he gets closer to her and whispers and basically says, like, "Will you fuck me?" Esmeralda once again says no and wants to know how Phoebus is doing. Now, Frollo says that Phoebus is dead. He looks across the square, sees Phoebus totally alive, but he's obviously not going to tell Esmeralda that, because if he had any chance with Esmeralda whatsoever, Phoebus being alive would get rid of that completely. You know, Frollo is once again angry that Esmeralda won't say yes to him and leaves.
But Frollo looking at Phoebus kind of tips her off that something is going on in that direction, and then that's when she sees Phoebus and starts calling out to him. Phoebus's fiance is like, "Isn't she calling for you?" And he's like, "No, let's go inside and have some drinks."
Yeah, it's a bit of a steamed hams moment. Esmeralda, you know, is like, "Wait a second. Aren't I being killed because I killed Phoebus?" But he's still alive. She's pretty overwhelmed in general at the unfortunate turns her life has taken in the past couple weeks, and she faints. But right before the guards are going to, you know, put her back in the cart and take her to be hanged, Quasimodo, our man Quasimodo, comes down, grabs her, picks her up, carries her into the church, runs all around the church, all the balconies and stuff, because he's really proud of himself, shouting, "Sanctuary!" Because that's a thing that you can do. And now the guards can't get Esmeralda because she's inside the church. And that would be sacrilegious.
Literally sacrilegious. Wait, no, hold on. I don't know where I was going with that.
Yeah, is there a metaphorical use of sacrilegious?
Now, Claude Frollo is not here. He's the one who's having Esmeralda killed, of course, but he can't bear to watch that happen because he still loves her and it would probably drive him completely insane.
Oh, he is far gone at this point. He runs out to the countryside around Paris, all the while thinking about how these feelings of his have ruined his life, have ruined Esmeralda's life, thinking about how, you know, stabbing Phoebus didn't even work because Dude's still alive. You know, I mean, Frollo was legitimately like, "Jesus Christ, I have condemned this woman to death. That's pretty fucked up." And Frollo has a pretty obsessive personality, so he He's, like, pretty close to the point of suicide here. The only thing that prevents him from doing it is that he knows he's gonna go to hell. Having nothing else to do, he comes back to the church, but on the way...
He just makes it take, like, as long as possible to actually get back to the church. He takes, like, the longest possible route. He hires, like, a boat to take him down the river instead of just walking.
He encounters Jayad passed out drunk in front of, like, a house where there's, like, a prostitute. And so, you know, I mean, Jayad's doing as Jayad does. Jayad's so drunk that he doesn't even recognize Frollo. Like, he flops down on the ground and pretends to be a drunk himself so Jayad won't see him. But even then, like, Jayad kind of pokes him with his foot and, like, just doesn't recognize him whatsoever. So Frollo, having nothing better to do, goes back to the church.
And because by now it's the middle of the night.
So he's thinking about how, like, Jesus Christ, Esmeralda got hanged. I really fucked up there. As he's walking up to his tower, he sees Esmeralda there in the cathedral. And obviously we know that Quasimodo saved her and that now this is her sanctuary. But Frollo doesn't know any of this because he yeeted out of there really fast. So he thinks, like, this is probably Esmeralda's ghost, right? This is fucking him up even further.
So he's like, shit, I can't even get rid of her now that she's dead.
I can't do anything right.
And so the next morning, Esmeralda wakes up pretty surprised that she's actually still alive. Quasimodo comes by with food and water. She asks him, why did you do that? And he's deaf, so he doesn't really respond. She figures out that he's deaf, and so they, like, very carefully have this conversation where he reads her lips, very slowly responds, and he basically tells her, like, well, I remember that you were the one who gave me water when everyone else was laughing at me, and I decided at that moment that I also loved you.
Yeah, so in case you couldn't tell with the whole Phoebus thing, Esmeralda, while being possibly, like, one of the better people in this story, she's also pretty superficial. Quasimodo's appearance clearly freaks her out, and Quasimodo is, like, the last thing he wants to do is be a bother to her. So he tries to make himself as scarce as possible, and the whole thing is just really sad. While he tries to make himself as scarce as possible, he gives her this whistle that has, like, a very high pitch, and I guess, like...
It's the one frequency that he can still hear.
For some reason. So he says to Esmeralda, like, use this if you need my help, but otherwise, like, I'm just gonna try to not be where you have to see me. And this obviously, you know, this makes Quasimodo pretty sad, but because he isn't a literal monster like his dad, Claude Frollo, you know, he's upset about this, but he respects Esmeralda's boundaries, he respects her concerns, still takes care of her, still brings her food and water, but otherwise, you know, like, he just kind of, he mopes around about how ugly he is, and that's Quasimodo's life.
They fall into this routine where Esmeralda can't leave the church because she'll get arrested because she's no longer protected by the sanctuary. She can't even really move around all that much because they don't want people to see her. So she basically stays in this one room all of the time, and Quasimodo will just bring her food and water, and she'll look out the window at Paris. And then one day she's watching out the window when she sees Phoebus on his horse going into the house of what she doesn't know is actually his fiance. And she calls Quasimodo over, basically tells him, like, hey, you're actually able to leave the church. And this is something that a lot of adaptations take out, is that Quasimodo is not actually, like, required to stay in the church all the time.
Yeah, I mean, he prefers to, because when he leaves, people will, like, you know, throw shit at him and call him ugly. But, like, he does things outside of the cathedral. When he becomes the Pope of Fools, like, that's not his first rodeo. Like, he knows Paris.
So she tells him, go and get Phoebus, explain to him that I'm actually still alive, and, you know, because he loves me so much, he'll come and save me. So Quasimodo goes down, and basically Phoebus has already gone in, so he's just standing there waiting basically the entire day and then well into the night until Phoebus finally does come out of the building. He's like, what the hell is your problem? He doesn't want to hear another word about Esmeralda, and also he wasn't watching at the time that Quasimodo saved her, so he just assumed that, like, she died and that was the end of it.
Phoebus tells Quasimodo to go away. Quasimodo tells Esmeralda the bad news, and Esmeralda tells him to go away. This situation just kind of sucks all around. Esmeralda and Quasimodo don't really talk anymore. He occasionally will, like, watch her while she's sleeping and stuff, but, like I said before, he tries to make himself as scarce as possible while she's awake. So, meanwhile, Frollo has heard that Esmeralda, you know, is being protected under the rule of Sanctuary. Frollo's reaction to this is that he is just going to shut himself up in his cell, like, presumably outside of the church, just not do anything. But because he has this obsessive personality, and because he can see the church from his window, all he can think about is how Quasimodo is having all of this time with Esmeralda, and, like, meanwhile, he is having these, like, sexual fantasies about her. This is leading to a very bad conclusion.
Because, as you can probably guess, Frollo is just kind of planning out when he can rape her without Quasimodo noticing.
Yeah, and because he is the Archdeacon, he has pretty much ultimate access to all areas of the church. One night, he takes his key, he goes up to the tower, and he is about to rape her. She tries to overpower him, she can't. At the last second, she finds the whistle that Quasimodo left for her. She blows it.
Quasimodo comes in, and without even recognizing that it's his dad who's doing this, just kind of like picks him up and throws him out of the room.
And he is straight up about to kill him. Like, he has a knife. And even if he didn't have a knife, Quasimodo could, like, 100% just, like, BTFO people, as will become plot important later. And Frollo knows this, too. Like, Frollo knows that Quasimodo is much stronger than he is. He takes Frollo out of the room because Quasimodo doesn't want Esmeralda to have to watch this violence. But as soon as the moonlight lights up Frollo's face, Quasimodo's like, oh, shit, the one person who I actually, like, will bow to. You know, like, we've already seen that the relationship between Frollo and Quasimodo is basically master and slave. Quasimodo's like, oh shit, it's my dad. Fuck. Sorry, dad. He gives Frollo the knife and basically says, like, you can do whatever you want. At which point, Esmeralda takes the knife, threatens Frollo, and tells him, like, I know that Phoebus isn't dead. You lied to me. At this point, Frollo leaves because he knows that this isn't going to end well for him. And Esmeralda goes back to her room and cries because this has been a traumatic experience for her. Frollo still seems to think that, like, Quasimodo and Esmeralda are, like, have a thing going on because he's pretty delusional. At this point, Frollo is fully like, you know what? If Esmeralda won't love me, she can't love anybody, which is all pretty much where he was already, but now it's just, like, fully cemented.
It's pretty unusual for someone to take Sanctuary and then to have the government actually still try to come after them. But it is something that happens in medieval France, and in this case, for whatever reason, the Parliament of Paris decides to intervene in this one. So they declare that Esmeralda must be removed from her sanctuary within 3 days and then hanged. And Frollo, despite having, like, left her to die previously already, still, I guess, kind of believes deep down in his heart that he can get her. He's trying to figure out a way to prevent this from happening.
Yeah, Frollo wants to find a way to get Esmeralda out of the church so that when, you know, Sanctuary gets overturned and they, like, batter down the doors, Esmeralda will be gone, and then Frollo can presumably take her somewhere where, like, she can't say no to him.
So in order to do this, Frollo decides the best way is to go find Pierre Gringoire and basically inform him. I don't know if you know this, but Esmeralda's actually still alive in the sanctuary, and since you technically are married to her, you might care whether or not she lives or dies. So I was thinking, what if you swapped clothes with her and you took her place, and then 3 days from now, instead of executing her, they'll execute you instead? And for some reason, Pierre Gringoire does not like this plan very much.
Okay, first of all, I love, like, this basically directly tells the reader that Pierre Gregoire is enough of a twink that he could pass for Esmeralda, which already, like, this is a very important character moment. Second, this also establishes that Pierre Gregoire is very much a, like, I just want to make sure I'm okay kind of guy. Like, even though Esmeralda totally stepped in and saved his life, he is not willing to return this favor if it means any danger on his part. Pierre Gregoire is like, okay, wait a second. Because Frollo, you know, he's an intimidating guy, and he's very set on saving Esmeralda. And Pierre Gregoire's like, okay, how about this? I will get the thieves and the gypsies of the Court of Miracles to rescue Esmeralda, you know, like, go to the church, riot, get her out of there. So Frollo's like, that would probably work, yeah? And so Pierre Gregoire is going to go back to the Court of Miracles, try to convince everybody to save Esmeralda, which won't be too hard because she's a beloved member of the community. Pierre and Frollo will take advantage of this chaos and get her out of there.
So this plan is going along pretty well. People in the Court of Miracles are pretty much on board with the idea of going to Notre Dame, fucking shit up, and then saving Esmeralda.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a twofer. Like, they're not big fans of the Catholic Church, so they're gonna go in and, like, steal stuff. Yeah, fuck shit up. And they're also gonna save Esmeralda. So this is a great plan.
But there's one small twist, is that Jehan has once again run out of money because it's been another couple months, and he really does love drinking and prostitutes despite being 16 years old.
Once again, that has never stopped a single 16-year-old ever.
Okay, Nora, how many people do you know at Horlick who hire prostitutes?
Probably a few. Okay, that's maybe a little extreme, but the drinking part, definitely.
Okay, sure. So Jehan has run out of money, and he knows that he can only ask Frollo for money so many times. And also, Jehan's not super on board with being a student, because it's pretty boring for a kid like him. So he's decided he's going to join the gypsies.
Yeah, specifically he says, like, I'm going to go vagabond. And Frollo's like, what? And Jehan's like, I'm going to go vagabond if you don't give me money. Frollo does not want to give him money. So Jehan's like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go vagabond. And that basically just means that he's going to live with the Court of Miracles now. It's not going to go well for him.
Because late one night, right at the stroke of midnight, basically everybody in the Court of Miracles goes all at once. They have no torches. They're being very careful to make basically no sound. So they're just kind of this dark mass moving through the darkened streets of Paris, as far as anyone can see.
So Quasimodo sees this mob outside of Notre Dame, naturally assumes that they are here to harm Esmeralda because he has no idea that Sanctuary is going to be broken. So he figures, well, if there's a mob outside Notre Dame trying to get in, they would know that the safest place for Esmeralda is here, so they must want to cause her harm.
So his idea, apparently there's been some renovation work being done on the roof of the church, so he runs up and just starts throwing shit down, like heavy construction equipment, and this kills a lot of people. He's throwing, like, big beams of wood down, and then the piece de resistance is he gets, like, a big hunk of lead, sets it on fire, and then just throws molten lead down into the crowd.
This is where Quasimodo's deafness really comes into play, because Clopin announces that the gypsies and the thieves, gypsies, tramps, and thieves, as Cher describes them in her iconic song, are here to save Esmeralda, but Quasimodo can't hear that. He is basically murdering innocent people. It's a wacky misunderstanding. So Jehan gets a ladder, and he tells people, hey guys, I know the church pretty well, because he does. I am going to put this ladder up. I'm going to climb up onto the gallery, basically like the lower section that you could walk on. He's like, okay, I'm going to go to this door. I know it's going to be unlocked. I know I can go and get Esmeralda. Everybody helps him out. You know, they put the ladder up. Jehan climbs up. Everybody follows him. Once Quasimodo realizes what's going on, he goes to the ladder and he pushes it. And a lot of people fall and die, but Jehan has managed to get up here. Jehan runs to the door, realizes that Quasimodo has locked it, tries to hide. Quasimodo finds him. Jayad has a crossbow. I'm not sure where he got it, but he shoots Quasimodo in the arm. Quasimodo is not to be fucked with. He pulls the arrow out. Jayad has, like, gotten all this armor from the tramps, the thieves, the etc. Quasimodo just rips all this armor off of him, beats him against the wall of the church, and then, like, throws him down. And he, like, Jayad's body falls on this, like, projecting stone ornament.
So basically, like, his dead body is just hanging off the wall of the church.
Very noticeably.
Quasimodo, having basically defeated everybody who's tried to rush in to the church, returns basically to tell Esmeralda that he just saved her, and then he finds out that she is gone, because while he was doing all of that, Pierre Gringoire and Frollo were sneaking in the back door and convincing her that they could save her and then taking her out the back door. Frollo, obviously Esmeralda knows who Frollo is by this point, so he is just disguising himself in this big cloak. As far as she's concerned, the guy who she felt just enough pity for to prevent him from dying and a mysterious man in a black cloak have come to take her away from the place that, as far as she knows, is the safest place she could possibly be. But they managed to convince her that, like, she actually is in danger.
Also, while all of this is going on, there's this long scene with the king and his men, and it's not really relevant to the story. It's interesting, but, like, there's no easy way to summarize it, because it's just kind of, like, a meditation on Victor Hugo's part of, like, what the monarchy was like in the 1400s, and what this particular king was like, because he was a real guy. For plot purposes, the conclusion of this scene is that the king notices that all of this havoc is being wreaked in Notre Dame because there's, like, very visible, like, fires on the top. The king, you know, he gets the concept of the Esmeralda situation. He doesn't seem to know what, like, Parliament's decision about the whole sanctuary thing was, because he tells his men, like, well, you know, I hate to break sanctuary, it doesn't look too good. Go put this mob down, you know, like, kill the people who haven't been killed by Quasimodo, and also go get that witch and hang her, because she's clearly been causing trouble. The mob is now being attacked by the king's soldiers, who, up till this point, they really only had to face Quasimodo, but now, like, the royal guard is involved in this, too.
So in the meantime, Pierre Gringoire has taken Esmeralda to the boat that Frollo reserved, and they're just slowly, quietly rowing down the Seine River while all of this shit is going on.
Yeah, and Esmeralda can hear, like, you know, like, people calling out, like, trying to find her, and, like, she's pretty freaked out by all of this. Pierre Gringoire talks to the hooded man, who is obviously Frollo, mentions, like, hey, did you see that guy who, like, Quasimodo beat the shit out of and then was, like, hanging from the church? Isn't that crazy? And the guy in the hood, who is obviously Claude Frollo, just, like, stops rowing for a second. Because, you know, from the reader's perspective, like, we know that Pierre Gringoire just casually mentioned how his brother died horribly.
So they just row down the river until they get far away enough from all this chaos that they think this is a pretty much safe place. The sun is starting to come up by this point.
Pierre Gringoire figures, like, okay, I could continue to help Esmeralda, but this could get pretty sticky, you know, like, soldiers are still in pursuit of her. I could just leave with the goat, who he's gotten fairly close with as a member of the Court of Miracles, and he's like, you know, my chance of survival is a lot higher if I just leave with the goat right now. And so, being Pierre Gringoire, that's what he does. So now Esmeralda and Frollo are alone in the boat.
It's kind of like that logic puzzle with, like, the hen and the fox and the bag of grain, where, like, you can't leave the fox alone with the hen, and you can't leave the hen alone with the bag of grain, and you have to get both of them across the river.
Pierre Gringoire is the farmer, and he 100% just left the hen with the fox.
But he got the bag of grain, and that's what's important.
He has the goat, which is clearly more important to Pierre than anything else.
So Frollo takes this opportunity to reveal to Esmeralda that he is the guy who's been trying to either kill her, kidnap her, or get her arrested for the past several months.
Or rape her. Don't forget rape her. So he brings Esmeralda to the gallows. So in this dramatic setting, he's like, look, this is where you're gonna die. If you choose not to be mine. And Esmeralda, as we already know, like, she has basically decided, if I can't be with Phoebus, I'm not going to be with anybody. And she throws herself on the gallows.
He really shot his shot, though.
He shot his shot horribly. Because even Frollo's realizing how much he's fucked up at this point. Because he, like, is still thinking about how his brother died horribly. Keep in mind at the start of the story that, like, Jayad was the only important thing to Frollo's life besides, like, alchemy. Like, he was up there. Maybe even tied with alchemy. So Frollo partially blames himself, but, you know, we know what kind of guy Frollo is, so he also is blaming Esmeralda for this, because, you know, if he hadn't had these feelings, if Esmeralda hadn't danced in front of the cathedral, then Jayad wouldn't have died. So Frollo's like, look, I don't want to send you to the gallows. I don't want to see you executed. The only way, like, I can't let you live if you aren't going to be with me. And Esmeralda's like, then I'll perish.
So Frollo has an idea. He has to go get the police in order for her to be hanged, but he can't leave her alone or she'll run away. So he goes over to the sack lady, has her grab onto her arms and just, like, hold her in place from within the bars of her prison cell.
And we already know that the sack woman hates Esmeralda because she hates all gypsies because she thinks gypsies ate her baby.
If you read the book, like, Victor Hugo does a pretty bad job of, like, pretending that he doesn't know this is what's going to happen, because, like, it's incredibly foreshadowed. But basically, you know, Esmeralda, being a foundling who was found by the gypsies, realizes that this is her mother here.
Well, yeah, because she carries around, like, this little baby shoe that, like, would have been on her foot when she was found. The sack lady has held on to this other shoe this whole time because it must have fallen off while her baby was being stolen. You can kind of see why this has changed in a lot of adaptations, because, first of all, Victor Hugo seems to be implying that, like, well, you know how there was only, like, one good gypsy in my story, right? Well, she's not even a gypsy.
Once you get into the implications of what Victor Hugo is saying with this moment, it gets pretty messed up.
And also, like, he uses this moment as kind of, like, the peak tragedy. That racism caused people to be, you know, prejudiced towards her. But that, like, Victor Hugo seems to be implying that, like, it's even sadder because she's not actually a gypsy. Which, like, wouldn't it be just as sad? In Victor Hugo's eyes, apparently not. And also because it, like, when the sack woman tells us, you know, that, like, gypsies stole her baby, as a modern reader, you go, like, well, that can't be what actually happened, you know, like, she's been deluded. Nope, turns out gypsies just go around stealing babies and replacing them with deformed ones because they swapped Esmeralda and Quasimodo, and apparently that's the thing that gypsies do.
Happens all the time.
Robot-y people are not portrayed very sympathetically here.
But so anyway, the sack lady realizes that this is her child who she has been basically waiting 15 years and doing literally nothing but begging God to give her child back.
So she is elated, and Esmeralda's also elated because she's always wanted, you know, a mother or a father to take care of her. So this is perfect, except Esmeralda points out, like, Mom, like, soldiers are coming to kill me right now. So the sack lady, you know, becomes super protective, like, pulls her into her cell, hides her.
She uses her motherly strength to basically bend the iron bars of the cell so she can just drag Esmeralda through the window.
And so the soldiers come that Frollo has brought. They question the sack lady. And it almost seems like she's gonna get away with this. They notice, however, that the bars are broken, and this is clearly pretty suspicious, but even then it seems like, you know, they're going away. But Esmeralda hears Phoebus's voice among these soldiers, cries out to Phoebus because she still naively believes that Phoebus will save her. He will not. Instead, this only shows the soldiers where Esmeralda is. They break down the wall. The sack woman tries her hardest to convince them to fight them off. It doesn't work. Esmeralda faints. The sack lady also faints. They drag them apart from each other.
They end up just kind of killing the sack lady accidentally by knocking her to the ground too hard and she hits her head.
So Esmeralda is pretty out of it. She no longer has the strength to fight back. And they bring her up the ladder to where she's going to be hanged.
So really the moral of the story here is fuck Phoebus, am I right?
Kind of fuck everybody. Like, fuck Pierre Gringoire for choosing the goat over Esmeralda. Because, I mean, who knows? If Pierre was still around, he could have, like, that would have thrown a wrench in Frollo's plan. You know, maybe, like, Pierre would have just run off with Esmeralda after realizing what Frollo's intention was. Fuck Frollo, of course, for starting all of this. Dude could have literally just, like, gone somewhere else. Taken a vacation, perhaps. Done some counseling to get over these feelings of his. Maybe just accept that it's okay to have sexual urges. They don't have to be acted on. He doesn't have to go to hell. Just because a lady is hot does not mean that she is a witch. But also, fuck Phoebus. Fuck Phoebus.
So Frollo has just decided to go back to Notre Dame Cathedral to watch from the roof as they hang her. And Quasimodo is also there watching from the roof, both of them not quite able to get over their feelings here. Frollo, in a moment of, like, absolute evil, just starts laughing maniacally. And Quasimodo can't hear the laughter, but he can, you know, see what he's doing. And this just makes him so mad that he just pushes Frollo off the roof. And Frollo is just kind of, like, grasping onto a gutter pipe for a couple minutes, until eventually he realizes, like, well, you know, this was basically how I was always fated to die, and then he loses his grip.
Yeah, and all the while, like, Quasimodo doesn't even look down at him. He's too busy looking at the distance, like, looking at where Esmeralda is being hanged from the top of the tower. When Frollo finally does fall, he hits at least one roof on the way down and basically just, like, becomes unrecognizable. He splats, basically. Quasimodo looks at Esmeralda being hanged, looks at Frollo on the ground, and says, like, there is all I ever loved. Because even though he did totally 100% just kill Frollo single-handedly a second ago, he still feels bad about it, because Frollo was one of the only people who ever, like, communicated with him in even a remotely positive way.
And then a couple years later, they find Esmeralda's body after she was hanged, having just been put in a cave somewhere. And they find this really weird misshapen skeleton, which is, like, clutching Esmeralda's skeleton. And they try to, like, get a closer look at it and, like, pry the two apart. And Quasimodo's skeleton just crumbles into dust. The end. You might be wondering, after having heard, like, everything about this, why the hell would Disney even try to put their own spin on that?
Well, we'll get to that. Oh, also, before this final chapter, like, Victor Hugo just kind of gives us, like, a curse, like, tying up all the loose ends, and he's like, well, after Frollo dies and Quasimodo disappears, everybody just assumes, like, well, Frollo was a sorcerer, Quasimodo was, like, his familiar, so clearly he smashed him so that he could, like, take his soul out and carry it to hell. So nobody's really mourning either of them. Pierre Gringoire just continues to be a poet.
He becomes a famous playwright, and after all, if you remember, he was a real person in real life, so.
Yeah. Phoebus gets married to Fleur-de-Lis, and his life just carries on.
And I'm sure he's a very faithful husband.
Of course. Yeah, so definitely a doubter of a story. As we said earlier, like, Victor Hugo's intention here is by no means to tell, like, a feel-good story about social justice. His purpose isn't even really to enrage people into, like, because while he does make some parallels between, like, the justice system of then and the justice system of now, for the most part, there's nothing overtly political in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Victor Hugo never really makes, like, a call to action, or seems to suggest that, like, what he's writing about is representative of a larger problem. Instead, Victor Hugo's main intention in writing this book is that by constantly, like, describing the tragedies that are occurring with, like, the beauty. You know, Notre Dame goes through this horrible experience and remains pretty much untouched. Any damages that occurred during the riots, you know, get repaired and, like, life goes on. So Victor Hugo seems to be suggesting here that great works of art, such as architecture, can kind of stand there to, like, you know, they oversee the worst parts of our history. They watch over the worst parts of our culture and of our society, and can still remain beautiful. And Victor Hugo seems to suggest that we should preserve these works of art because they have seen us through so much.
Basically, you could boil the message down to if these walls could talk.
Exactly. You know, that they stand testament to the worst parts of our history and the best parts of our history.
And I would be absolutely amazed. We haven't gone through them yet. That's what's coming up next. But I would be absolutely amazed if there were even a single adaptation that we look at where the same focus is placed on architecture.
And I'll come back to this repeatedly during this season, but I will say right now that this is a very good example of a story where the themes and intentions of the original almost have to be changed by adaptations. And the reason for this is that the way that we view architecture has changed. Most people today would say that yes, like, beautiful sculptures or monuments or cathedrals should be preserved because they are, you know, a testament of the better parts of our culture and our history. But this wasn't really a sentiment that was commonly expressed at this time. People really weren't concerned with historical preservation. It very much makes sense that in order for this story to remain relevant, that there should be an emphasis on, say, social justice, because that is also in the text. That can be pulled out, and that can be accented. And it almost has to be, in order for this story to remain relevant. Because it's interesting, it would be interesting to see a modern adaptation that has the same focus on architecture, but I would almost argue that that adaptation would not be as effective as the original story, because the original story fulfilled its purpose. Notre Dame is looking better than ever. Even on the website for Notre Dame Cathedral itself, specifically say that Victor Hugo helped save the cathedral.
Now, this might be the part where we go through like a detailed analysis of all the other secondary kind of themes of the book, but I think we did a decently good job mixing our analysis in with the plot summary. And also this, we've been recording cumulatively for about 3 hours now.
There's a lot to talk about here.
You know, without further ado, we're going to get into the actual adaptations in the upcoming episodes in the following months. I've been Ben Schultz.
I've been Nora Schultz.
And you have been listening to Trying to Adapt.
Thank you.